Before I begin, there are a few things I want to make a comment about. I talked to my wife, it was this morning, I think it was, about people making a commitment, okay, whether it's work or whether it's family. In this case, those two could get married, a commitment. Now, one thing commitment's going to do, right? What do you think it's going to bring? It's going to bring an awful lot of trials, awful lot of difficulties, awful lot of turmoil. But that's what the commitment's about. And you go to work. And you work hard. They're trying to get rid of everything. Many years ago, it was asked to a blind man who was doing chiseling to carve out an elephant. And they asked him, how can you tell what you're doing? He says, I just take away everything that looked like an elephant. Well, you know, in a sense, it's a play on word, but I understand that. It's the same thing that when two people get married, guess what they have to do for many years? Start carving out everything, chiseling away everything that doesn't look like a marriage. You know why? Because you don't know what it looks like. You're going in a sense, blind, but with confidence that God's going to direct you and show you and teach you and lead you. And you believe that He will teach you where to put that hammer, where to put that chisel. You just don't assume that you know where to go. It's kind of interesting that when we have, if I told you last week, that I'm not here trying to tell you to lay the foundations of salvation, foundations of laying on hands, foundations of forgiveness, because you already are there. What I'm doing here, I'm adding to or increasing or expounding upon, if I can use that terminology, some of the words that are written. And so when we go into this book of Genesis, and I do an awful lot of looking at just certain words, not every word, just certain words, and I have a reason behind that, because it helps us to have the beginning, if I use that terminology, of our committing ourselves to listen to every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And you had to kind of listen and chisel away the words that you thought they meant one thing. And then God comes along and says, that's not what I said. And you say, oh my. And so you, in a sense, you destroy your sculpture and start over again, right? And so you eliminate all those things that you had believed in or trusted in and had confidence in, believing that they were of God, and then God begins to deal with you and start showing His word, and then all of a sudden, but you said to God, I am committed to follow you. He says, good, now you made a commitment, I'm going to give you a test. Take a look at my word. And start chiseling away. All that is not my word. Because my word is what? Holy, just, and good. Now I'm going to backtrack just a little bit because we've got some new people here, so we all kind of know where we're going. But before you have been with me for a while, did God make a mistake creating the tree of the knowledge of good and evil?
No.
What did God call the knowledge of good and evil?
Keto.
Keep that part in mind. It's very important because, see, I know from listening to different articles and different people many, many years ago, that it looks like God set them up for a fall. And it looks like He set them up for a fall. Okay, there it is. I'm leaving. And, you know, of course, human beings, they got to try something that doesn't work, right? I want to go get. Now, listen very carefully as we go through this. Well, let me ask you some questions. You have been here before. What does the word naked mean? This is a test now.
Vulnerable.
How do you know that? What other word connects that to it? The word ashamed, which is not really the good word to use. What does that word mean in Hebrew?
Confounded
and confused.
Dispersed.
So what we have here in the last verse of chapter 2, it says they were not dispersed. They were not confounded. They were not lost. They were not confused. They knew exactly what God wanted to do. And they were naked, not exposed to vulnerability, but they were naked before that because they were not confused. Now, what's the other word for naked?
Naked.
What's the other word in Hebrew for naked?
Shame.
No. The snake was more what? Subtle.
Subtle.
All right. The snake was more subtle. Same basic word. Same basic meaning as the word naked. All right. So now we find a little bit difference between the two, don't we? And there's a comparison between the two. And I don't want to go through the story again. But I do want you to keep that part in mind because we're going to talk about just a brief thing. As we talked about the word subtle, old English word, I love it. There's another word there that was before it. And it's called, in English, who was subtle?
Serpent.
The serpent. What does serpent mean?
Conniving.
What's the Hebrew word for some sort of what?
Conniving?
No. You're close, but be more specific. Conniving is more connected with the word naked in the sense that it becomes cunning or conniving. But see, even the Word of God says, I want you to be cunning. I want you to be smart. I want you to know. Because the same exact word says, if you know God, you want to know God, you're going to be cunning. Literally. Okay? And we had mentioned last week, right? Be as smart as a
serpent
and gentle as a dove. So you got to have that smartness, you know? And Jesus said to his disciples, Yeshua said to his disciples, take heed how you hear something. Just not take heed what you hear, but how you hear it. Pay close attention to the words that are coming out. And we're going to find out a little bit here. All right? Because we're running into this serpent. And the Hebrew word for it basically means hiss or whisper.
Right.
Okay, remember that now? Hiss or whisper. And it relates to what other word?
Divination.
Oh, you guys know that. Okay. That is a very interesting phrase. Here we have a connection of this one that's called serpent connected to the verb that has to do with seeking
other knowledge.
All right. You know what I'm saying? So I have a picture here of what's going on in this scene. Just a brief speech thought. And one thing I said before, but so those who have not been heard before, when the serpent came to deceive, why did he not deceive Adam? Or again, answer that question: why did he deceive the woman?
He wasn't the mother of all the living.
You got that clear as bell. Now we're going to talk about this a little bit because I think you're going to find some interesting words in Hebrew. All right? Now, let's go Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. We'll just read the first statement here and then we'll run up to where I want to go. And now the serpent was more subtle, I'm using Old English now because I love Old English, than any beast in the field which God had said, which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden. Now, what was his approach? What do you think he's trying to maneuver? First thing the serpent did was what?
He's trying to cause
bring God's word into question.
Right.
Discredit, challenge it. How many times have you in your life, either a teenager or even an old adult, challenge the questionability of, let's say, a law. And you are wrong. The questionability of a teacher that you didn't like growing up. Lo and behold, you were wrong. All right? Whose authority has got what authority? How many of you challenge the authority of your mom or dad? None of you, of course. You know that. But see, this is what's going on. And we sometimes look back, we say, oh, it's no big deal, right? Oh, well, yeah, okay. And growing up as parents, we say, well, the child challenged me, we have to punish him. And we have love and compassion for the child. However, the child still did something, right? And so we're kind of stuck with a problem. We either do nothing or we do something. There's nothing in between, right? There's nothing in between. You can't halfway do it, halfway not do it. It's either going to be one way or the other. Listen to what I'm saying here, because we'll get to the statement, but I'm going to clarify here in a minute. Okay. There is one very major thing. Just what did God say? She repeats the statement, which the Satan convicts her, convinces her that this is not what God meant when he stated, to them to not eat the tree, because they will not die in dying. I'll tell you why, how he got this through. It's the very next sentence. Not what she said, but what he said. Verse 5. Now just listen for a minute. For God knows, or God doth know, or doeth know, that in the day ye eat thereof, then thine eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be... Most of your translations use the wrong word. They probably use the word gods. I'm sorry. Gods do not know the knowledge of good and evil. Elohim does. The creator of heaven and earth does. He is the one that's fully aware. So he was telling them, now God knows something. His purpose of creating you, I'm putting words here now, is for you to understand and be just like him. He's not going to kill you. He's going to just want you to know, and all you have to do is partake of this, and you will be just like it, because that's where you're going. That's the heading, the direction. And lo and behold, what did he tell? How did he convince her with it? God knows that when you eat of it, something's going to happen. God knows that you're going to be just like him, knowing good and evil. That's why he planted it there for you, didn't he? All right, let's put some play on words here. Did God plant the tree of knowledge of good and evil to cause the woman to stumble?
No,
we got to get that into our heads. And you know, I've told you before, I think Eve was probably one of the most brilliant women on the face of the earth. Don't get me wrong. Adam, probably the most brilliant man on the face of the earth. We have probably deteriorated ever since. Because our knowledge, we may have beautiful hindsight. However, you know, how many of you talk God to God face to face in this room? Well, Adam did, and Eve did. So you know, they got one to one ratio, you know, always like to be taught 1-to-1. And no distractions, no kids, no grandkids, no work, no tearing down. No storm, no thunder, no nothing, and you just got a beautiful, wonderful time, and you'll be able to understand, and believe me, I don't think, my personal opinion, that God left them ignorant. I think he taught them everything they needed to know, including language. All right, let's go on with this. Before we come to this, I want to say this much. Lo mot te mu toch. Now, basic means in Hebrew, no to die, ye will live. Or no to die, you will die. What God says, you will die. Satan comes and says, no to die, you to live. Or you not to die. Basically, let's put words into our English. This is what basically, I'm going to use bad, ancient, 1611 English, or this bad grammar, but I want to play on a words. And you'll understand a little bit as I go along. He says, no death to ye, no demise to ye, no disease to ye, no end to life to ye, no passing away to ye, no deadness to ye. No dissolution to ye, no room to ye, no mortality to ye. And what do you think I'm using the word ye for? That's what it says in Hebrew. He's not talking to the woman. The word is ye, plural, talking to both. All right? Otherwise, it'd be thou. He would use the word thou. And Hebrew would have the singular verb, thou. Feminine singular verb, thou. But didn't. It was plural. So anytime somebody, and sometimes the men in some Christian worlds, think that, oh, Adam was way over there on the other side of the garden. If he was, the Hebrew would have written it, thou. But didn't. It read it as ye. He's just not talking to Eve, the dumb blonde. All right? He's talking to both of them. Oh, the... Redhead? I speak a little lower than her because she can't hear very well. Yeah, excuse me, my throat is a little sore today. Now let's go on with this thing so we can understand that that is the ye. And I'll even prove it to you as we keep going on here. Now, verse 6. And when the woman, we'll play on this word, saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat and also and gave also unto her husband with her, and they did eat. That's the interesting thing in Hebrew here now. Would you understand what it says in Hebrew? Be fast. Oh, there you go. Just look at the Hebrew right there. I'll play out some words here, okay? Before we go there, remember the Apostle John, first chapter. I think it's the first chapter. Hope some of you remember better than I do. It's probably one of those questions my wife's going to ask. Feast. I'm going to say, oh. The ways of the world is what? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. What do you see here in the sixth verse? The lust of the flesh, food, lust of the eyes, pleasing, and desire to be wise. Did you see all that in all the ones right there in the very beginning? Explains the rest of history of mankind. Did you ever notice that before? It's there, plain as day. God spoke about it in the very, very beginning. So I told you the first four chapters are very, very fascinating. They reveal so much information for the rest of the mankind from that point on. It's just fascinating to see the little details.
Isn't it similar to the temptations of Christ in the wilderness?
Right.
And then he dealt with those specific ones right off the bat.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that what you're told? That I had to step in the shoe. I'm making myself a little more room here. Anyway, to get back to where we're at now. Now, the word that says translated is and gave also. Interesting word. You know what that word means in Hebrew? It comes from the verb to gather. Basically, it means and gave together unto her husband with her, and he did eat. So there's no way, men, you get an excuse to say it was a dumb blonde. You were there. Okay? Now, I said once again, his goal wasn't to deceive Adam. It would have been profitless. Because see, Adam, we'll take this word here for a minute. Adam could not bring forth anything living. It was always the woman. We're going to play in words here. I need a marker. All right. I have a shin. I'm not too good at this Hebrew. And we have a het. It's a dot here. And a dot there. What does that tell you?
Ish.
What?
Ish.
All right. Learn something from what Hebrew. One thing I left out here. Now, the reason why I'm doing this is because the man's name is an aleph, a yod, and a shin, but no dot. That's ish. Meaning man. This is pronounced, since it's got a dot there, ish sha. It doubles. Ish sha. There's a dot. It's in the middle of two letters. The sound is repeated in Hebrew. I don't know if you knew that or not. But we have to ask ourselves a question. What does all that mean? Well, you know that means man, right? And when this bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh was presented to Adam, why did he name her or call her Ishsha? You know what that word means? That which comes out of or comes from. That's why she's called Isha. That's why women are called women. It means the same thing. Which comes out of or from something. In this case, it came from the man. Understand this so far? It's a fascinating no on play on words. So, Isha is a very interesting word. Now, interesting in her words, for it was. Verse 7. Now, they partook of the fruit, right? Okay, listen carefully. This is very fascinating. I hope to introduce something that I hope that I can understand it, tell you the truth first. And then I hope I can explain it. All right? It's a twofold way here, if you don't mind. And the eyes of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves apron. Now, stop and think. Why fig leaves? They just made aprons. They just covered the bottom part of themselves. Yes.
Fig leaves are huge.
Fig leaves are huge.
Have you ever had them on your skin, though? You itch like crazy.
No, I can't say I've ever tried to wear a
Now, I'm going to try my very best to conclude up to verse 13 today. So, see, I'm not too very far off, am I? So I'll be able to get this thing done faster than I thought. Fig tree. Now, the fig is the third tree that was named. What was the name of the first one? Tree of life. What was the name of the second one?
Tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Now we have a third tree called what? The fig tree. Okay. Now we know from representations of a certain location in the book of where? I'm going to go to. Daniel went to it, remember? Book of Judges, 9th chapter. It's a very interesting parable. If you don't quite get it, that's okay. We're not here to explain that one. But I want you to go to Jeremiah, to Judges, 9th chapter, verse 10. The tree's talking here, by the way. The fig tree is talking here. And it says, trees don't talk. Well, of course they don't talk. Neither does the tree of knowledge of good and evil doesn't talk. And the tree of life doesn't talk. If we're talking physical grounds, Judges, 9th chapter, and verse 10. Now, I'm not going to read the whole parable. I'm just going to cover this section here that had to do with the fig tree. Okay? So I find it very interesting that this one came up in the very beginning in Genesis. And it says, and the trees also said to the fig tree, come thou and reign over us. But what did the fig tree say? Ah, listen. But the fig tree said unto them, should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit and go to promote over the trees? What do you think the tree was telling them? What do you think the trees were telling them? Not to get up his fruit? What, Daniel?
Well, because of what fig trees look like, when there are no leaves, nothing else on it, and it's actually a very ugly, ugly tree. Unlike most trees with leaves, figs are uniquely ugly.
Yeah.
To me, when I read this, and the first thing is the fig tree saying, I'm not going to cover you.
Did you get that message? Did you understand what he got to say? I'm not going to cover. I'm not going to promote you. I'm not going to cover your trees. I am not going to take dominion over you. I have did it once before, and I'm not going to do it again. You understand that? The play in words. You understand what I'm saying? The fig tree, the big huge leaves, says, I will not do something. I will not be promoted over the trees. A tree represents people. Blatantly, it represents people. You understood the whole story there in the book of Judges? Well, it's not hard to read. You just read the parable and you understand it. That's really not that difficult. And the fig tree says, I am not going to do that. I'm going to do something different. I'm not going to forsake my sweetness, and I'm not going to forsake my good fruit. Now, we're talking about people too, aren't we? I don't want to go with the area today, but just understand the little thing interesting here, the very, very beginning of the book of Genesis talks about this fig tree that was used to cover up something. All right? And of course, it couldn't. We'll go in later on and find out what really did cover up Adam and Eve, but it wasn't the fig tree. Okay? Let's continue on with this fig tree because I think it's very important. Yes.
I was just noting here, they're talking about the derivation of the word te'ena, that's translated fig tree. There's been thought that perhaps it comes from a root from ena, which means to meet opportunely.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. I didn't look up the word fig tree. I just wondered if the statement would be this. Thank you. Now, you don't have to go here. You've heard it in the prophets, and you've heard it here. So I'm just going to read a line. And it says, and it has to do with 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 24. And Judah and Israel dwell safely, every man in his own vine and under his own fig tree, from Dan to Beersheba and through all the days of Solomon. So a fig tree has something that is very obviously to do what? It's going to give pleasant fruit and sweet. All right? Good fruit and sweet fruit. All right? But I want to move up here real quickly. Proverbs 27, verse 18. Now, what says every man under his own fig tree, that means something has to happen, right? Man has to take care of his fig tree, right? Well, Proverbs, a lot of places to put it, right? Proverbs 27, verse 18. Whosoever keeps the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof. So that he waits on his master
should be honored. Wow. What? What do you think it's trying to tell us there? He who what? Keeps his fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof. So he that waits on his master shall be honored. Now there's a parallel between those two phrases, aren't there? Right? Association with fig tree. Association with something else called what? Wait on your master and honor. Yes.
Does that seem to be the indication of someone who's in tune with what the maturation of the figs are on the tree? Kind of what Messiah was getting at.
Yeah, we're going to go there. We're going to go there. Yes. I mean, that's obvious what we've seen here. And so it's very fascinating to know that this is right on the very beginning of the book of Genesis. And sometimes we have just... To our mind, sometimes our brain is, that's really stupid, sowing yourself a bunch of fig trees or fig leaves. But this message, the fig tree, tells you something. Now let's go to Matthew, chapter 21. Pretty long one, so bear with me. Matthew 21, and verse 19, beginning in verse 19. Fig tree. Very fascinating here now. And when he saw a fig tree in the way, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves only. And he said unto it, let no fruit grow from thee henceforth forevermore. And presently the fig tree withered away. And the disciples saw it. And they marveled, saying, how soon did this fig tree wither away? Jesus answered and said to them, listen very carefully what Jesus is saying here now. Verily I say unto you, if ye have faith and doubt not, ye shall not only do which is done to the fig tree, but also ye shall say unto this mountain, be ye removed, and thou shalt cast in the sea, and it shall be done. What is the play on words here?
Trees are people, mountains are nations.
I'm sorry, what? Oh.
Trees are people, mountains are nations.
Okay. Did you hear that? Always mountains refers to a nation. What does a fig tree represent? I'm sorry, what?
Israel.
No. We'll get to there because every man's going to have his fig tree in the kingdom of God. Regardless if you're Israel or not, you're going to have a fig tree. Fig tree is not Israel. The fig tree is the olive tree. That's a different story, different analogy. This is a fig tree is different. Yes. Because Israel didn't exist in Genesis chapter 3.
That's true.
Yes.
Using this phrase, it, going back with the parable in Proverbs, the fig tree is the master. So in this case, it actually says fig tree be the one who has the fruit, which in this case would be Sanhedrin.
Okay. Now, he's leading up to something, which is what I want to go to. Because this is what it's all talking about. Do you understand what's happening here? There's a representation of this thing. The fig tree does not represent Israel. It represents something else. Yes.
The thing is, there's only leaves on it, right?
I'm sorry, what?
There was only leaves on the trees, right?
Yes, correct. There's no fruit. That's right. And that's why he cursed it. Now, it was a representation of something else.
Yeah, isn't it like the leaves are represented the pretension, the appearance, hypocrisy, like what they were, when they were put the fig leaves... On them.
See, why am I speaking for you? You already know the answer. Okay, but my question to you is, did you notice that in chapter 3 in Genesis about the fig tree? Why fig leaves? It tells you something. Although it does say every man will have his own fig tree. And I'm not a fig lover. I don't like figs. So I'm not really going to have a fig tree, am I? Well, according to Torah, yeah. According to the prophets, yeah. So I can say, okay, what is it that I'm going to have? What am I up to? And it says here in Proverbs, what? If I keep my fig tree, I'll eat the fruit thereof. The same way is if I wait upon my master, I will receive honor. That's what it says right there, Proverbs. Honor from the master, not honor from people. Let's get back here now to Matthew. Verse 22. And all things whatsoever ye ask in prayer, believing, and ye shall receive it. And when he had come to the temple, here's the word come through, now he's coming to the temple, right? The high priest, or the chief priest, and the elders of the people came to him as he was teaching. Now the high priest and the elders. Now elders generally refers to members of the Sanhedrin. Jeff was trying to separate the difference between, there never, as far as I know in history, there never was a member of the chief priest or high priest that was ever part of the Sanhedrin. They were definitely not. I haven't found any record on that. They're always non, because they, priests always had another job to do. Their function was over here. But the governing authority was over by the Sanhedrin, including during the time of Moses. All right? Yeah, let's go back. But what authority does these, verse 23. And when he came out to the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came and said unto him, came unto him as he was teaching and saying, by what authority do thou do these things? And who gave thee this authority? And Jesus answered and said to him, okay, I also will ask you one. Which of ye tell me, I likewise will tell you by the authority I do. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men? All right, now, what's going on here in this story? What was being challenged?
Jesus' authority.
Jesus' authority. Where did he get his authority? He doesn't say that, does he? He's got the curse in the fig tree. Now, the Pharisees weren't there, neither was the high priest there, but disciples were there. He just got to eliminating the fig tree that wasn't producing fruit. That was sweet, and that was good. All right? Did you get the play on words here? So when he talks about the fig tree, most of those people back at his time knew what he's talking about. We in this period of point in time say, fig tree? Why did he curse a fig tree for? I had a sermon many years ago. Or someone tried to give a sermon where, you know, Jesus made some, you know, bad mistakes once in a while. And one of them was this one. What? He cursed a fig tree? Why? Well, it had no fruit on it. He shouldn't have done that. So, you know, Jesus had some faults. Oh, really? By the way, that sermon didn't go very well. Most people just shook their heads and said, anyway. But it was an interesting sermon. But nonetheless, let's continue on here. And they reasoned with themselves, saying so and so forth. But if we say at the man, then so and so forth. So verse 27. He says, they couldn't answer it. Then Jesus says, I'll tell you by what authority. Neither tell I you. What authority I do these things. But what do you think? Now he's bringing in another parable. We have the parable up here. We have the event of the fig tree, right? And he cursed it. Then along comes the fig tree representatives. It produced no fruit. It was not sweet. Nor was it good, and they represent authority, right? Protection, what you're supposed to do. Teach them, lead them, and produce good fruit. Don't think of the fruit of the vine right now. It's a different parallel. And so we're looking here, and he says, but what do you think? A certain man has two sons, and he came to the first and said, son, go and work today in my vineyard. And he answered, said, huh, I will not. But afterwards he repented and went. Then he came to the second son and said, likewise. And he says, answered, he says, yeah, I'll go, sir. And didn't go. Now, which of these did the will of his father? Well, they all said unto him, what? well, had to be, you know, the one that wins. Then I say unto you, that the publicans and the harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. Now stop. Remember what Proverbs said? Did you catch that proverb phrase? He who keeps his fig tree is like he who waits upon his master and receives honor. All right? Here we have one son who said no, but then he changed and he waited upon his master, and his master said, I want you to go to work in my field. And he says, I will. In this case, it's his father. He decided to go. Now, which one's got more honor? Which of the two sons got more honor? The one? First one. Did you notice the second one didn't make it? It's a play on words, number one, number two. We won't go there yet. Now, let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. This is another interesting phrase about the fig tree. Now, remember what Daniel said? It represents what? The Sanhedrin. The ones that Moses was told to set up, or God set up under Moses, the 70 elders, way back during time of Moses' time. I'll have my complete faith and belief that those 70 men did produce fruit and did have good fruit and sweet fruit. And guess what they received? Honor. Because they waited. All right? Now as the time goes by, we see that he's cursed the fig tree. Had no fruit. That's bad news. But now let's go to Matthew 24, verse 32. Now he brings in another parable. Of course, parables over what? The fig tree. I find this very fascinating because, see, I don't have a complete answer as of yet today. We know that the Sanhedrin has been reestablished. Been like, what, 4 years, 5 years?
06. October
04. 04, okay. So the Sanhedrin had been reestablished. He says, now learn a parable of the fig tree. When its branches are yet tender, puts forth leaves, you know something. Summer's coming. No, not fall. The summer harvest is coming. You got that message? It's half of the summertime. Summer harvest is going to come. What comes out of the summer harvest? It's the fall harvest. So it kind of gives you about a little bit of a timing about approximately where all this stuff is going to come to. When you see it formed, I don't know what time of the year, it doesn't make any difference, but there's a beginning of something being formed here. And you said, now you know something being formed. So far, they have not made any decisions. So it may be a fig tree that has no fruit. I don't know. But right now, they have not made any decisions. And one of the big decisions they're supposed to make first was the calendar. And they have not done anything with the calendar. They're just sitting there and sitting there, you know. That's a big issue in Judaism, by the way. It's a huge issue in Judaism. He says, likewise, ye, when you see these things, know that it is near, even at the door, meaning the return of the Messiah. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass until all these things be fulfilled. So when the beginning of the fig tree starts, and you start seeing something, two things taking place, he says, what two things taking place? First, it's tender, so it's very young. And it brings forth leaves. What's unique about a fig tree?
You can cut it down. It's the only tree you can cut it down completely to the ground and it will regenerate again.
What's the nature of the fig tree? What's the first thing the fig tree does?
Brings its fruit out
first. He didn't mention that, did he? Did you catch that? He didn't mention it first. The fruit comes first, then the leaves. Well, some people take a look at that and says, when it's tender, that means the fruit. And it could be. I'm not saying it isn't. But I just want to pay attention. You look, pay a little close attention to how this works. Because now I'll go back to the book of Genesis, and all of a sudden this fig tree was cut down and made to cover two people. Cover mankind. Try to cover them from them. They were confounded. They were confused. They really did not know what to do. They were terrified. They were scared to death, literally scared to death. And they had no other choice. And so they went to the fig tree for protection. All right. Let's continue on. I want to go to we missed that one. I'm going to go on to a very interesting place. Revelations. You didn't know a fig tree was mentioned there, did you? Yes, I mean, I'm not a prophet, and I don't say Isaiah to say a prophet. I'm not good at prophecy, and I really try my very best, like most of you, I think, try to figure out what it says, right? But I think it's fascinating that it says certain things. And we're talking about the fig tree, which covered up Adam and Eve. Right? Revelation 6, verse 12, this is the sixth seal. And behold, when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. We're not going to go into what that means in Judaism, right? When the moon turned to blood, what do they think? We're in verse 13. 12. All right. Now, verse 13. And the stars of heaven fell on earth as a fig tree cast off her, interesting word, out of season figs. It says untimely figs. They were cast off before they were to be picked. I don't know if I ever saw a fig tree being shaken so hard that its little tiny fruits fell off. But here we see the fig tree in an untimely, just means out of season, out of its time of its bringing forth the sweet fruit and the ripe fruit. It was cast off. The sixth seal. Did you ever catch that before? It's a very fascinating thought, isn't it? Anybody got any thoughts about that? I think it's fantastic.
What was the question?
On the 13th verse there, the stars of heaven will fall to the earth. We won't talk, go into prophecy what that means. Even as a fig tree cast off her untimely figs. Untimely means out of season figs. Now, it's not the earthquake that we're talking about here. We're talking about something falling from heaven above. As a fig tree cast her unfruitful, if I can use that word, figs, or untimely figs before it was to be picked. And when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Okay. Now we have a parable. Parable of Jesus cursed the fig tree, right? It had no fruit. This one here, he's eliminating it in the sixth seal. Did you catch that? He's eliminating it completely. As he's going to stop something. Stop something from coming about. And Jesus said, when you see the fig tree with its tender branches and its leaves starting, know it is near. We're talking about the sixth seal here, aren't we? Did you catch that? The sixth seal is what he's referring to. He says, no, it's near. Well, you know, we have the seventh seal, and we have the first trumpet, seventh trumpet, sixth, all the seventh trumpet, and we have the seven thunders, then we have the seven bowls, just quite a ways away, if you look at it from that point of view. So it's kind of fascinating that since he cursed the fig tree in the first place, no more fruit will ever come from you, meaning Sanhedrin. But let's go back there. Let's go back there so we can get that to be thou removed. The whole tree gets removed. Verse 21 of Matthew 21. 21. Talk about the tree. Be you removed and be you cast into the sea. Talking about the mountain. He says, that fig tree you will not produce. What did he say there? Let's back up to verse 19. Let no fruit grow on thee henceforth forevermore. In other words, it's not going to come. All we're going to see in the end time is when we see it appear, know that it's time for the return of the Messiah, but not immediately. Great tribulation has to happen yet. We're not at the great tribulation yet, are we? And if you look at that part of Matthew, we haven't reached the great tribulation yet. It's in the process of beginning of the great tribulation. Well, it's going to happen pretty soon. Or it could be in the midst of it, too. I'm not quite sure. I want to look at that. But so I think it's very interesting. We look at this fig tree way back in the book of Genesis. And it's the third tree mentioned. And I grant you, it's kind of like, why a fig tree? Why didn't they pick something else, you know? Big leaves. I would just sow them on them. No, so much dangerous. They went around then, would they? Well, you know, it probably had to do hand weaving. I don't know. But anyway, get off that subject, guy. They depended on the fig tree protecting them from the wrath of God. They depended upon the fig tree to cover up their nakedness, their vulnerability. They were vulnerable now, not by the devil, but by the creator of heaven and earth. Now they're vulnerable. They're no shield, no nothing. And now they're going to be, in a sense, attacked. And they got attacked, didn't they? They got attacked so violently, if I can use that terminology, that they are thrown out by force by an angel that had a red flaming sword. Do you think it was a pleasant time when they walked out and said, oh, that doesn't like me? No, I think they had almost, in one sense, maybe had to run for their lives when they got them out of there. Do you understand the picture? When you're vulnerable, doesn't mean you're vulnerable to the devil. Because he can only take your life and the flesh. But what you're vulnerable to, become naked before, and Jesus, God said, you are all naked before me, I know everything about you. That means you cannot hide from him at all. You cannot find a place to cover. And do you think the fig tree is going to cover you? You think the Sanhedrin is going to cover you? You think, now remember, the prophecy there has to do with the house of Judah. It has to do with the nation of Judah today, or Israel today. And Sanhedrin is formed there. And they're going to depend upon, excuse me, on the Sanhedrin to protect them from the wrath of God. I hope we don't. That's not a judgment, what I'm saying. But it's a parallel for us to understand that the fig tree is not what's going to protect us. It's not going to do, as says there in the book of Judges, it's not there to promote itself over any tree. It wasn't designed in the first place by God to promote itself over Adam and Eve. Did you understand the story of the fig tree? Did you ever know it wasn't there before? See how things are in in the book of Genesis that lead tells us the story as we keep going down. We can learn an awful lot.